Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. The Earth, the only known crucible of life and consciousness, is in constant and certain danger. I've told you about some of these dangers in earlier broadcasts. Collision with any one of the over 500,000 asteroids and other near-Earth objects, large enough to end all life on Earth. Pandemics. Nanotechnological or biological warfare launched by an enemy and gone out of control. Irreversible climate change and other environmental disasters. And a thousand other possibilities that haven't even been imagined yet. Some of them quite likely. For example, as Christopher Chiba of Princeton University and science writer Robert Britt stated, Earth's biosphere is, quote, regularly disrupted every 100 million years or so by giant impacts that would render human life impossible. A biosphere only has a certain amount of time to develop a technical intelligence which is capable of realizing that there is an impact hazard, cataloging that hazard, and avoiding the next impact. Bottom line, only a civilization smart enough to spot the hazard and mitigate it can survive. Close quote. The unique intelligence and creativity of our race will be needed and will need to be increased if we are to have the brain power needed to meet these catastrophes. I have also shown you that our race and civilization, far from increasing our racial quality and advancing in intelligence and consciousness, are now moving disastrously and almost certainly fatally in the opposite direction. But today on this program, we look even farther into the future. Let us assume that European man can evade near-term catastrophes for a few more centuries, can survive racially, and can avoid running out of fossil fuels before we break the surly bonds of Earth. Let us assume that we successfully terraform Mars and become an interplanetary species. What then? The problem of cosmic impacts would continue, wherever we set our foot. And even greater challenges to our survival and continued evolution loom in the far distant future, much more terrible than those I have mentioned so far, and physically and mathematically certain to occur. It has taken us 3.5 billion years to go from the first primitive organisms to Pythagoras and Pierce. 5 billion years in the future, the sun will become a red giant, and in about 2 billion years after that, it will engulf the Earth, which long before will have had every single life form on its surface burned and boiled into non-existence. And Mars will not be far behind. To escape, we will have to have become by then not just an interplanetary species, but an interstellar one. On last week's program, I introduced the idea of entropy, the idea that the universe itself is winding down. If life successfully meets, if we meet all the other challenges we must overcome, the final challenge will be entropy. Entropy is not some speculative fantasy or off-the-wall theory. It is one of the bedrock natural laws of the universe. It is implicit in the second law of thermodynamics. I am the one who's being speculative when I suggest that entropy can be defeated. Temperature and energy gradients tend to blur and disappear as matter, heat, and energy spread out and eventually reach equilibrium. Given a hot gas released into the atmosphere of, say, your kitchen, the gas will spread throughout the room, raising the temperature of the air in the room and itself becoming cooler in the process, until it is thoroughly mixed and the temperature reaches equilibrium. An ice cube in a cup of hot tea will melt until the tea and what used to be the cube are irretrievably mixed and the temperature is averaged out. Then the remaining heat in the tea radiates into the room, and the temperature of the tea and the air in the room become equal. If the room is heated by your oil burner in the basement, the heat radiates from your less than perfectly insulated home and adds a minuscule amount of random molecular motion, that is, heat, to the earth. And since the oil inevitably runs out, your home and the surrounding atmosphere will become the same temperature. By heating your home with that oil, you will also have broken down the complex organic molecules in the oil into simpler substances to create the heat, an irreversible process. At the same time, the earth is being warmed by the sun, a ball of concentrated energy which is likewise spreading its energy outward, energy that must ultimately become more and more equally distributed throughout space. Therefore, the sun must go out, and its energy and the energy of every sun must become unavailable for any further work, as it becomes an undifferentiated and thinly spread cloud, little different from the apparent vacuum of interstellar space. Gas does not segregate itself from the air, flow into open valves, and fill and pressurize empty helium tanks. Ice cubes don't reassemble themselves after melting into your tea. Random molecular vibrations don't align themselves to turn combustion byproducts back into petroleum. The clouds of gas left over after supernovae don't reassemble themselves into solar systems and stars. Saying these things is just another way of saying that time flows only in one direction. And that direction is this, toward ever more disorder and randomness, toward a breakdown of all concentrated energy and matter into uniformity. It is, in fact, this universal tendency to wind down, to increase entropy, that defines the direction of time itself. In 1865, while whites in North America were slaughtering themselves over a disagreement largely precipitated by the presence of blacks in our society, the German physicist Rudolf Clausius saw and defined entropy and said, quote, "The entropy of the universe tends to a maximum," close quote. Eventually, the heat of every star will have spread out as much as it can. At that point, there will be no such things as warmer objects or cooler objects. Everything will be the same, very, very low temperature. At that point, the universe will attain what is called a steady state. Since no energy differences will exist any longer, no work can be done, and nothing significant or noticeable can or will ever change again. The universe will be almost a vacuum. The randomly moving photons and electrons that remain will be very far apart and will hardly ever interact. All processes which consume energy, including life, will no longer be able to exist. The universe itself and everything in it is winding down. Yet there is a force in the universe which appears to act in quite the opposite way. That force is called life. Living beings began with a single molecule that was able to replicate itself and have so far assembled themselves into beings with a brain 7 inches across that has 1,000 times as many synapses as there are stars in the Milky Way galaxy. Through natural selection, life becomes ever more complex and ever more conscious as time goes on. Living beings not only are comprised of more and more complex and more organized structures, but the things they do create organization and complexity on an ever-increasing scale. Behold, the primordial ooze has become Athens and Paris and the Saturn V rocket. Almost everything that we living beings are and do seems to run counter to entropy. Now you may say, and rightly so, that living beings don't really violate the law of entropy. Though they appear to act in an anti-entropic way, they actually increase entropy by using up available energy and dispersing heat and in other ways. And I know that. And I also know that as I have entered into discussion of the farthest future challenges life must face on this program, I have also entered the realm of speculation. But living beings are more than just matter in motion. I can inject you with a compound that causes your death, and no matter whatsoever has been destroyed. Instead, a process has been stopped. We are not like clockwork machines. We are instead like fire. Fire is real, but fire is not matter. Fire is something that is happening to matter. We also are something that is happening to matter. We are a process. We are a process that is not yet completed. And who is to say what the end of this process may be? Perhaps this process has just barely begun its initial stages. Perhaps this process is one that creates universes and ordains natural laws. Now you may also say, and rightly so, that these events are in the far, far distant future. But does that make them any less significant? If the extinction of our race at its current state of development is a cosmic catastrophe, how much greater a catastrophe would be the extinction of our even more advanced descendants, whose capabilities and understanding of their mission might well be 100 million times greater than ours? What if, by retarding our evolutionary advancement now, even a little, we set our descendants back enough so that they cannot deal with the inevitable challenges they must face? Is there any greater sin than that? Now, I urge you who are listening to my words to go to nationalvanguard.org and look at the text version of this broadcast. There you will see two of the most important graphs you will ever see in your life. They are taken from Charles Murray's book, Human Accomplishment. These graphs show us that of all the significant scientific accomplishments and figures in human history, 97% of them took place in or were from modern Europe and North America. And that of the remaining 3%, almost all took place in the ancient Western world. Only a minuscule fraction took place in the Arab world, East Asia, and South Asia combined, or any place else on this planet. In other words, virtually all scientific accomplishments have been made by whites, and virtually all the great figures in the sciences have been white people. So now, after taking a deep breath and assimilating the implications of those two graphs, consider again my speculations about defeating entropy and overcoming the inevitable death of the universe. Do we have to know for certain that entropy, or the expansion of the sun, or comet impacts with the Earth can be defeated at all? To know that the survival and advancement of the white race is the best and indeed the only known chance for defeating them? And that the real categorical imperative of our lives must be to advance our race to the point of assured survival and absolute dominion over our own destiny? And that to divert any energy and any time away from that purpose, to say nothing of contravening it, is a sin, the punishment of which should be and will be certain death. There is something special about our race, the European race, something that parallels and intersects with intelligence and creativity and character, but is not exactly defined by any of the three. Something which never had a name until Dr. William Pierce called it the divine spark. Something which makes us unique. Something which must not be destroyed, as the Jews and their accomplices are trying to do. Something which must not be lost through blindness or stupidity or laziness. Something which alone gives us hope of conquering time and space and entropy, of birthing new universes and life everlasting, and bringing about a new, greater, an unimaginable consciousness and power, which we, in our limited understanding, can only call God. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance. The National Alliance is working to educate white men and women around the world as to the nature of the reality we must face, and organizing our people to ensure our survival and advancement. Write to National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA, to learn how you can make your life count. Or visit natall.com. That's NATALL.com. Once again, our postal address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you of the words of Richard Berkeley Cotton. Freedom is not free. Free men are not equal. And equal men are not free.
Now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil.